now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Right. Well, good evening, everybody, wherever you are on the planet at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim who you are and have always been. And that does take a tremendous amount of courage, as I will explain in the show. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Pacific Standard Time is at 6 o'clock. So I just want to say hello to the people out there on the West Coast. I hope you're having a good day, you know, so far. The day's not over for you yet, but I hope you have a good evening. So I just wanted to say hello and welcome to the show. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you ever want more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.absradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. It's www.absradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And just want to say before we get underway here this evening that these broadcasts are also podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And these podcasts are also available for download on Audible and Amazon Music. And just in case you want to stay with me for the full hour and in the second half of the show, you'd like to be part of the show, I invite you to call in. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I just really like to hear your heart, your thoughts on tonight's subject. It's entitled, Seeing the Invisible People. The eyes of the soul, seeing the invisible people, the eyes of the soul. So before we get underway tonight, I just wanted to take time out and wish my son a very early, happy 33rd birthday. He's such a fine man, and it's been a joy to watch him grow and develop into the wonderful husband and father he is. And so just a shout out to Mark, my son, happy birthday, as we will hopefully be celebrating this weekend with cake, ice cream, and who knows what else. Probably a nice dinner out would be fine with me. So happy birthday, Mark. Well, I'm now in my fifth year with BBS Radio. And as I always mention during these broadcasts, because people are tuning in for the very first time, in which I really appreciate. But these broadcasts have always focused on the continued integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all within the context, a greater context of our relationships with ourselves, relationships with others, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. And this integration of our spirituality and our mental health is very essential. Because at any given moment, our minds interpret what they take in through our senses, you know, the eyes, ears, nose, you know, and touch and all that. And based on our previous experiences or education levels and upbringing and so forth, our mind's interpretations of our experiences often fail to capture, let's say, a more accurate understanding of the deeper lessons and ultimate realities and greater truths. And I often share this with my clients about my philosophy of how and why I work with people the way that I do. And it actually comes from two deep-seated beliefs within myself, beliefs that I've been carrying around for decades. And the first one is that I believe that people have the answers within themselves, meaning they know the kind of life they want to live, what brings them happiness, what brings them joy and peace and contentment. and they also know what doesn't. And so that's where I begin with clients. That is where I begin with myself. That is what I where I begin with just people in general. You know, I think that you have the answers within yourself. It's just don't look on the outside, but look within. And that goes right on the heels of the second deep-seated belief, is that I believe that from the moment we are born, and even then some, we have everything we need for in this life, in terms of our talents, our skills, our gifts, our graces, if you want to call them that, personalities, strengths, so on and so forth, the very best of ourselves. And yet, you and I both know that there's times that when we go through troubling, even horrific experiences, such as being in the wrong place at the wrong time and suffering some traumatic experiences, or maybe we're struggling with the same mistakes or the bad habits over and over and over again that we've never, let's say, have properly dealt with or healed from, or even struggling to make sense out of our issues that have been handed down to us through our family lines. And that gets interesting, and just how far back we can go. And we realize that even though a problem or an issue didn't start with us, because we have that blood soul connection with our families and our and down through the family lines, that we are perhaps the strongest one in the entire family line to be able to not only heal ourselves from these issues, but also to be able to heal those issues from going forward to future generations who have yet to be born, as well as the ability to be able to heal backwards, let's say, and to heal those who have come before us who were just unable to heal from those issues, whatever they are. But nevertheless, these issues and the pain that they often entail often keep us from living the life we need to discover fully who we are at our core. That is, we are souls. And as a result, we often live our lives from a place of, let's say, mental or emotional or physical or even spiritual woundedness and pain, instead of from a place of healing and joy and wholeness and love. And ironically, we often receive these very deep psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds as a result of being in relationship with one another. And whether or not the wounding was intentional or accidental, it is what we do with them afterwards. You know, once we have been wounded, or let's say that perhaps we've wounded another person, that will either reinforce those wounds or find a way to be healed and be free from those burdens. And according to Andrew Sung Park, he's the author of the book From Hurt to Healing, he writes that when people's deep wounds are not healed, these wounds will become vortexes of troubled waters, intertwined with their own instinct of survival and fear. And many victims instinctively synchronize their wavelengths, as he puts it, with the offenders, with the person who has hurt them. And they internalize their perpetrator's images and values and externalize them in treating their own victims. So in short, they see the world through their oppressor's eyes. And yet seeing again through their own eyes begins the healing process. And basically, that is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. You know, it can be summed up in one word, and you know what I'm going to say. Say it with me. Namaste, which is roughly translated, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to see it in yourself. The fact that I see it in you will allow me to treat you with dignity, value, respect, and love. And you and I both know that the world needs a lot of that these days. And so the difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover the sacred, which has always been in you, and the sacredness of who you have always are. And, you know, your sacredness is often communicated at times through your giftedness or your graces or your skills and uniqueness that we've come into the world with that I just mentioned. It's from the Latin word hecatos. It's thisness. It's what the Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus coined. He lived in the 1300s. And he says that we all have a thisness. We all have this hecatos. And especially now, the world needs people who will begin to value and honor their own thisness, their own uniqueness, their own hecatos, as well as value and honor one another's hecatos. Well, throughout this time of the year, you know, despite the excitement and the hustle and bustle, and yes, we've just come off of Thanksgiving, and, you know, but we're already in the throes of the craziness of the holiday season, of the Christmas season and Hanukkah and so forth. Many people struggle to find beauty and joy, often focusing on the external sights and sounds of the season that can hopefully lift them out of their depression or at least quiet their anxieties. And yet, there is tremendous joy to be found during this time of the year. But I want to ask you to first look within and see your beauty as a soul. Hear your beauty as a soul and know your beauty as a soul. And as my teacher is fond of saying, that beauty itself is often, you know, spoken of with reference to worldly relationships or worldly objects. And he says, like, do not use the word beauty with regard to the physical features of a man or a woman or an expensive object that promotes your status in society. Because how beauty is perceived is a reflection, again, here we go, of the mind's inner purity and goodness. You know, our minds will interpret, well, this is beautiful, or that's ugly, or this isn't as beautiful as this over here, and so forth. And so the mind gets in there and really starts to put its value systems on, you know, what we take in, let's say, through our senses. And yet, as long as the soul is bound within, let's say, nature's laws of cause and effect, that deep essence of beauty, that is the soul, can never be directly experienced. Now, you know, many people find it very difficult, if not downright resistant, when it comes to truly discovering who they are as a soul. You know, it's almost as if they consider discovering who I am as being too high of a cost to pay in terms of what they have to let go of. But, you know, when you think about it, in the end, when the body is in its transition, you have to let go of everything that you thought that we've accumulated in this life. We have to let go of the degrees and the homes and the families and the saving accounts and the 401ks, even down to those, let's say, family secrets that were once promised to be taken to the grave. Everything. So whatever we know, we identify ourselves with and thus limit our understanding of who we truly are. Well, in previous broadcasts, if you've been following me for some time, I've talked about listening to your soul in silence, you know, drowning out all the distractions, the to-do lists that we keep making in our head, and other thoughts that are just added to this monkey mind. And in other words, to quiet ourselves, giving ourselves time and space each and every day just to sit quietly and allow our soul's voice to speak. Well, this week, however, I'm talking more about living as the soul you are. And more importantly, what changes when you understand yourself as a vast soul and you begin to live as a soul? Because embracing this reality really changes things up for us. But what exactly changes? Everything. Relationships change. How we interact with one another changes because we're not going to be able to see one another based on externals anymore. We don't focus on problems, but rather we will focus on how we nurture one another as souls. Okay, again, coming back to namaste. The fact that I can see myself as a lighted soul allows me to see your lighted soul. Well, quite often throughout the history of humanity, people have been defined as ugly. You know, they're not beautiful, they're not important, or they might be defined as unimportant or essential or inessential. This is all based on externals. You know, that a person's worth was determined, and even today is determined, based solely upon the exterior. Yeah, their looks, their hairstyles, their skin color, their bloodlines, and so on and so forth. And yet, throughout history, there has always been a set of standards for the rich and the powerful, and another standard for the poor and the vulnerable. But you know, I believe this, you know, and this is coming straight from my heart. I believe that a time is now upon us when these man-made boundaries and limitations and standards are being shaken to their very core. And I'm not the only one who's been saying these things. You know, I've been hearing this for many, many years now. I just think it's getting closer and closer and closer, you know, because certainly more and more people are becoming aware of themselves as a soul, and especially they are hungering to live as a soul, from their soul, and so forth. And what is encouraging for me, you know, and transforming, is that generations who now, and even those who are yet to be born, are learning to see people for who they are, not from the limited externals of skin color or gender or age or culture or socioeconomic status, but to see one another as souls. You know, these things that do not apply when you understand people as souls, those externals. But folks, even though we have a long way to go, there have been many movements to help each generation reclaim who they are and empower them to embrace themselves as an eternal soul. And it is really based on the understanding of how you see yourself. Because there's a deeper level completeness, let's say, that I believe humanity is waking up to, but has not fully grasped yet. And it deals with helping men and women heal together. Because when women heal from their wounds, and they find and they use their voices, they begin to transform humanity by helping men become better men. And how is this possible? Well, quite frankly, because they begin to correct the imbalance of the divine feminine and the divine masculine energies within themselves. And when men find their healing and transformation, they not only become better men, but they also empower women to become better women. You know, it is a restoration of this balance of the divine and feminine and masculine energies. And we all have masculine and feminine energy. And it's not about gender or sex, because regardless of gender, we can access both. We produce both estrogen and testosterone. And in doing so, we are empowered to be, let's say, co-creators of healing, creativity, and life. But you know, in order to do this respectively, we also need to begin paying attention to seeing the invisible people in our lives. You see, there are many invisible people throughout the world, people that we pass by every day and we don't even notice. We just pay no mind. You know, people who blend into the background or who may be content to work behind the scenes, as it were. And they're often termed as invisible people. But in a negative light, they're often also understood as the ones who have been disregarded. Or people whom society chooses to overlook. Because let's say that society doesn't want to be reminded of deeper level pain and suffering and misery out there. that people, regardless of whether or not they're seen, truly suffer with. And this has not been a recent phenomenon over the past few years since, let's say, COVID. You know, quite often throughout the history of humanity, people have been defined as important, unimportant, essential, or inessential. Okay. And, you know, there's one particular group of people in which there are a growing number of invisible people. And I'm talking about the disappearances and the deaths of Native American women. In recent years, there have been several films highlighting the disappearances and deaths of Native American women, documentaries too. But perhaps you've seen a few of these films in theaters or Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu or wherever. And one such film is entitled Dance Me Outside. It was made back in 1994, long a time ago, starring a very young Adam Beach. And it focuses on the murder of a young Native woman at the hands of a white man on the Kitabinessi Reserve in northern Ontario. And despite the fatal crime, the white man is captured, but his sentence is light, which leads the community to demand justice and or vengeance. Well, there's another film that's also gained popularity in this particular subject, and that's Wind River. It tells the story of an 18-year-old Native American woman found dead in the snow. And actor Jeremy Renner, he plays, I think his character is Corey Lambert. He's a veteran game tracker for the Fish and Wildlife Service. And in the story, Lambert is separated from his Native American wife, Wilma, played by the actress Julia Jones, after the mysterious death of their own teenage daughter years back. And during this investigation, questions start to arise. You know, how did she get out to the middle of the forest in blizzard conditions? Where are her shoes? Who is she? Was she murdered? And while Wind River does raise awareness of relevant issues facing tribal communities, at its core, the story is about a non-Native man coming to terms with his own missing and murdered Native daughter, as well as touching on the complexities that tribal law enforcement face when seeking justice for the victims. And most recently, as last year, 2023, the movie The Killers of the Flower Moon came out and really captures the let's say, the real history behind one family of the Osage women who were killed off so that their white husbands could cash in on their oil head rights and life insurance policies. Now, in an interview, the director, Martin Scorsese, he talked about how he wanted to capture the very nature of this societal contempt that he referred to as a virus or a cancer that creates this sense of a kind of a easygoing genocide. And I think he did a great job at this. But there are countless other movies that depict the genocide and mistreatment of Native American people, Native American women especially. There's Dances with Wolves, Smoke Signals, Thunderheart, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, Powwow Highway, Skins, Slash Back, Reservation Dogs, and Imprint. And these are just to name a few. And as I said, this hasn't been a recent phenomenon, you know, the mistreatment, the disappearance, and the deaths of Native American women. This has not been a recent phenomenon over the past year since, let's say, COVID, or even 10 years ago. And, you know, and I write about such conditions in my book, When Ancestors Weep. I go through the entire history as far back as I could have gone, in terms of going all the way back to the days of Columbus, and even just a little bit before that, and how the attitudes were just reinforced and reinforced and reinforced. I mean, and even to this day, generations of Native Americans and indigenous cultures continue to struggle against an underlying desire to have them become, by societies, the invisible people. In other words, to be seen and not heard from. And even within the residential schools of America, that whole history, and the industrial schools in Canada, conditions were deplorable, as noted by a Dr. Peter Bryce. He was the medical inspector for the Department of Indian Affairs. And way back in 1907, he toured the residential schools of Western Canada and British Columbia. As I said, they were termed as industrial schools. And he wrote a scathing report on the criminal health conditions there. And just a few examples, you know, Dr. Bryce reports that reported that Native children were being deliberately infected with diseases like tuberculosis, and then they're left to die untreated as a part of regular practice. And he cited an average death rate of about 40% in the residential schools, in these industrial schools. But despite the subpar health conditions in the residential schools, there was also this underlying philosophy that, let's say, promoted a more aggressive euthanasia of the so-called savage communities. You know, by 1830, Canadian Indians, indigenous people, were seen as a drain on the economy of the Crown of England. And so back then, it was believed that the native people had to become productive through the means of, let's say, evangelization or education or agriculture. Right? And it was believed that these residential and industrial schools were the perfect tools for assimilating this race of people. And schools seemed harmless enough, but there was a huge difference back then between the schools and the educational systems they represented. Because many, many, many reports and eyewitness accounts of severe emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual abuses were inflicted upon the children who attended these schools. And for adult survivors of traumatic events, avoiding thinking and or talking about such topics is common because of feeling so overwhelmed, so overwhelmed. And for example, some Native people may resort to ingesting alcohol or other substances as a way to numb their thoughts and their feelings related to this trauma. And others may have resorted to forms of self-harm, such as burning or cutting, that release endorphins to either numb their feelings of trauma or create a sense of feeling alive. And yet, despite these problems, there is a way going forward who I believe, whose time has come, a way that empowers both women and men of all races and embraces the fact that as one heals, we all heal together. Well, I really, really, really would love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you want to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And if you're just joining me for the second half of the show, I just want to recap here just for a little bit, because early in the show, I was talking about how throughout the history of humanity, people have been defined as important or unimportant, essential or inessential, or visible and invisible, all based on externals. In other words, that a person's worth was determined based solely upon the exterior. You know, their looks, their hairstyles, their skin color, and bloodlines. In fact, throughout history, there has always been a set of standards for the rich and powerful, and another standard for the poor and the vulnerable. But as I said in the first half of the show, you know, I believe a time is now upon us when these man-made boundaries and limitations and standards are being shaken to their very core. Anybody remember the Me Too movement? That's just one example. That was a whole lot of shaking going on, and it's not over yet. And I'm not the only one who's been saying these things, that these man-made boundaries and limitations and standards are being shaken. You know, certainly more and more people are becoming aware of themselves as a soul, and they are finally hungering to live as a soul and to live from their soul. And from where I sit, what is encouraging and transforming is that generations who are now here and those who have yet to be born are learning and will be learning to see people for who they are, not from the limited externals of skin color or gender, age, culture, or socioeconomic status, but to see one another as souls. Well, you and I both know that even though we've come a long way, we still have a long way to go in this area. There have been many movements to help each generation reclaim who they are and empower themselves to embrace themselves as eternal souls. You see, there's a deeper level of completeness that I believe humanity is waking up to, but has not fully grasped yet. And it deals with, you know, helping men and women heal, but not individually, but help heal together. Because when women heal from their wounds and their woundedness, and they find and they use their voice, they transform humanity. And they have always done this. They transform humanity. But this time it's going to be by helping men become better men, to live to the fullness of their masculinity, but not in a destructive way. Because they begin to correct the imbalance of the divine feminine masculine energies, there we go, within themselves. Because when men find their healing and transformation, they not only become better men and live to the fullness of what it means to be masculine, but they also empower women to become better women, to live to the full potential of the feminine. You see, it's this restoration of the balance of the divine feminine and masculine energies that has been so far out of whack for centuries upon centuries upon centuries. And we all have masculine and feminine energy because, you know, it's not about gender. It's not about sex. And although both sexes produce estrogen and testosterone, the levels differ. You know, if you have more testosterone, okay, and the right chromosome, boom, okay, you're a male. And if you have more estrogen, and again, the right chromosome, boom, you are a female. And so forth. And so, but both sexes have estrogen and testosterone in them. But still, regardless of gender, we can access both the feminine and masculine energies. And in doing so, we're empowered to be co-creators of the healing, creativity, and life for both men and women. And I'm certain that at some point in your life, you've heard of the ancient African proverb that states that it takes a village to raise a child. Or in other words, the survival of any people extends beyond the immediate family. Because regardless of nationality and creed and race, we are more connected to one another than what we realize. However, just as it takes many to contribute to the development of a generation of children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so on and so forth, history has now shown us that it also takes a village to hide scandals, to cover up abuses, and to ignore atrocities. Because no one person or entity acts alone. No secret remains hidden, and truth never stays buried. Dead men and women and children do tell tales of how they died. Many have died of natural causes. Some have died at the hands of others, and some people were not even considered worthy to be buried, respectively. But for all of these atrocities and more, it's time for us to begin telling the stories of how they lived. And where do we see ourselves in these stories? It's a time for us to see them for who they are, as souls. Souls that live on after their hearts have stopped beating and the brain waves have ceased. Souls that surround us like a great cloud of witnesses or a communion of saints. Because our ancestors are speaking to us constantly through the soul and blood that runs through our veins. Yet, how do we reconcile these events with what we do today? And this is the real effort behind healing intergenerational trauma, which, again, if you've been listening to me for some time, you know that's very near and dear to my heart, because trauma has the potential, not a guarantee, trauma has the potential to disconnect us from who we are as a soul and remembering that we are a soul. And the reason for this is because trauma places this distorted template over our perceptions. And whatever the traumatic experience it is, you know, trauma says to us, well, this is all there is, and this is all there is to you, and this is as good as it gets. Don't expect anything more. And these are all lies. These are all distortions that come from other wounded people who have yet to embrace themselves as a soul. Don't buy into that. You are more than your experiences. In fact, once we embrace ourselves as soul, we may be astonished to see the power of our soul to not only transcend our trauma and transform our wounded energy, but we're also going to empower others to do the same. But still, as history teaches us, has taught us, that many have feared the resiliency and the power of the soul, and therefore have tried to silence its cry. Now, echoing this sentiment, one of my teachers, Joseph Rael, Beautiful Painted Arrow, in a recently published work entitled Becoming Medicine, Pathways of Initiation into Living Spirituality, he writes, "The way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are, because you are already medicine." Let me read that again, because this is profound. "The way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are, because you are already medicine. Nobody gives it to you. You are already." And what a gift to yourself, your family, to the world, when you realize you are already medicine for others. You are already healing for others. We just have to work on ourselves in clearing out everything that gets in the way of that medicine in terms of our unresolved emotional and psychological and physical and spiritual woundedness. We have to work on our relationships that have occurred in the past, and we have to work on resolving our differences, our pain, our bitterness, our egos, and a time to forgive. See, in order for us to fully embrace ourselves, not as a soul, or not just as a soul, I would say, but also as medicine for others and ourselves, we have to come to terms with everything that has brought us to even this very moment in our lives. Well, I remember a time, it was on a crisp, sunny November morning. My Native American Indian friends and I drove from Philadelphia to the former site of the Carlisle Indian Industrial Boarding School. It was about an hour and a half-ish, 2 hours, depending on traffic. You see, they were in town for a fundraiser, and they had come from South Dakota. They were Lakota. And like I said, they were in a town for a fundraiser, and they wanted to see this school. They have never been there before, since their only knowledge of this place was from the stories that had been told to them or they read. And Native American Indian boarding schools have always been a sensitive subject with my friends, as they recall the horrific stories told to them by tribal grandmothers and grandfathers when they were younger. And several of these experiences have plagued their ancestors with physical and psychological and spiritual scars, emotional scars, that have been and are a constant reminder of how the United States viewed its so-called savage and uncivilized race. And ironically, history's patterns of prejudice and cruelty and mistreatment are not exclusive to the Native American Indians, but also have extended to any gender, race, class, ethnicity, nationality, in which a society and its systems, like government, the educational system, religious systems, science, and so forth, categorize anyone as unworthy, untouchable, or unlovable. Well, today, many people look to place specific blame for such brutality. And yet, who's at fault? Who do you prosecute for such crimes against humanity? I mean, that's one of the questions that keeps getting raised when we start looking at intergenerational trauma. Can individuals be singled out, or does blame belong to communities in general? And as I said, just as the ancient African proverb stated that it takes a village to raise a child, so too that it takes an entire village to perpetrate the physical, emotional, and spiritual atrocities, because nobody acts alone. And what I find very disturbing was with this whole history of the Native American boarding schools and the history of how in America and in Canada, how Native American cultures were treated, or people of different color or races or religions and so forth. Surprisingly, this caught the attention of Adolf Hitler. Remember him? He writes in his diary, he says, "Even in those days, I saw that there was a twofold method by which alone it would be possible to bring about an amelioration of these conditions. The method is, first, to create better fundamental conditions of societal development by establishing a profound feeling of social responsibilities among the public. And second, to combine this feeling for social responsibilities with a ruthless determination to prune away all, undesirables, which are incapable of being improved." And we certainly know what Hitler did with all of that. But yeah, he took a look at what was going on in America, and he said, "I think I can improve upon that." And look where that got us. And yet, as more and more of these historical atrocities emerge from those whose cries reach our own souls, villages in general may just simply want to hide their heads in the sand and pretend not to see or to hear or to speak any evil. However, this time has come that we can no longer pretend that we're not part of systems that have produced and perpetuated the mistreatment of others. And which ones still carry that on. Well, there was a time that I also visited my Native American friends, but this time I was out at the Wounded Knee Memorial in South Dakota. And I've been in there, a couple of times, and I always go there by myself, just because it is very, I don't want to say just profound, because it hits me in my core just to imagine what had occurred there, with everybody who was just buried in a mass burial, just an outright slaughter of the Native American people. And yet, there's a powerful quote that comes from the movie Imprint that really captures the devastation of intergenerational trauma and why many, 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 many people still struggle and still are plagued with the traumatic experiences that have gone on. And there's a scene in the movie Imprint when a younger generation woman is talking to a Native American elder. He's a man who's just been medicine, let's say, all of his life, and he knew it. Okay. And he was just standing there quietly at the Wounded Knee. It wasn't a memorial back in the movie, but it was on a site where that mass burial was. And he begins to speak to this young woman, and he goes, "I listened to the screams of the wounded and the dying carried on the wind across the prairie. It was about this time when the white man attacked, and they slaughtered them. They slaughtered defenseless men, women, and children. Their blood spilled here on this very ground. We may forget about these things. The trees, they remember. The rocks and the earth, they remember when we forget. The story is forever imprinted on this land. And if we listen, they will guide us. They will give us visions. They will tell us stories. Past, present, and future all touch one another. Time does not exist. For spirits, time does not exist." Well, hearkening back to when I brought my Lakota friends to the Carlisle boarding school, we were standing in the middle of the boarding school gravesite, and we were struck by the diversity of the Native American Indian children who we identified by the white gravestones. And if you've ever been there, it can be very gut-wrenching. And among the children buried there, as they were identified, were Cherokee, Lakota, Sioux, Inuit, Apache, Pueblo, Seminole, and many other tribal nations. Do you know about a third of the gravestones were marked unknown, which represented unidentified children? And as we blessed each grave with a tobacco and a sage offering, we honored all who were buried there, not referring to them as children, but instead referring to them as grandmothers and grandfathers, ancestors. And in this afternoon of these prayers, we basically unraveled Captain Richard Pratt's philosophy of killing the Indian to save the man. Because Pratt's philosophy back in the day fueled a nation's behavior of assimilating Indians into European ways by forcing, and relocating children and stripping them of their names and traditional clothes and made them cut their hair and forget your language and not practice your religion, among other native customs. And thousands of children were portrayed as having been assimilated into the American culture in this historical picture, sitting on the grass in front of Captain Pratt's home and headquarters. And it was a good, length of time walking from the white gravestones to this plaque or this picture. And as we stood on that grassy lawn, my friends were deeply moved. But yet they proudly proclaimed through their tears that Pratt had failed because we Indians are still here. How's that for visibility? Yeah, the truth never stays buried because humanity cannot, has not, and will never be able to annihilate the people who are truly eternal souls. You know, graves may acknowledge the lives that once existed in certain places and time. The soul is not bound by time and space and dimension. Graves may hold the remains of physical bodies that have been mutilated or charred or violated or hidden. But graves, marked or otherwise, have never been able to hold the soul. We live on. And therefore, whenever we look at our blood, we acknowledge those who have come before us, as well as those who will come after us. The evidence of our connectedness is in the soul and the blood that holds the truth of not only what we collectively have been through, but also who we collectively are. And as I said a couple of times throughout this broadcast, I strongly believe that humanity is in this stage in its cycle that is being called to awaken to this truth and reconnect with God on a higher conscious level of the soul. And interestingly, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has never looked for the answers in the right places. Because all too often the focus has been on these externals that have caused such division in humanity since the beginning of measured time. And it is these externals that have produced the isms in the world. There's sexism, racism, ageism, classism, egoism, and so on and so on and so on. When we focus on the soul of a person, all of these isms fall away, because they simply cannot follow the language of the soul, because the soul is always found by looking inward. And there is no more sexism. There's no more racism. There's no more ageism. There is no more egoisms, because isms do not have a voice in the matters of the soul. So let's focus on bringing light around to all this season, further protect from the darker forces that are out there. In this season, yes, let there be light. If we can focus on the light, it will make everybody stronger. And let's remember to definitely take time, thank God, thank the universe, and offer whatever help we can with our own abundance, and especially the thoughts of healing and light for all. I am Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I invite you to join me in 2 weeks, as we will be continuing these discussions of how we integrate our spirituality and our mental health. But in the meantime, may everybody be safe, may everybody behave yourselves, and may God always carry you in the palm of God's hands. Take care and good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.